Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, episode 69.
Nice.
Succubus.
I hate you.
Not gonna lie, y'all. We knew this was coming. We know how numbers work. We saw it coming down the line, and we were like, hey, you know what's better than a Valentine's Day special? 69 Nice. Succubus. Why not? Let's do it.
I'm gonna part the kimono for a minute. And in our work Slack, you and Eric both were like, 69, we're doing Succubus. I'm like, but I had something else planned. They're like, nope, we're doing Succubus.
We have to lean in. What are we going to be? Like 69, a really important, culturally significant myth from the past?
Yes.
No. Succubus.
Okay. Ah. Fine.
And because everything's topsy-turvy and I'm suggesting episodes, why don't you try reading the patron names, Jules?
I'm so scared. Okay. So welcome this week to our new patrons, Tyler, Frank M., Ryan, Hector, and Fireside Radio Productions.
You guys never leave your partners extracted of their sexual chi in bed.
We talked about this. Waystation and Lost Girl are not accurate to what succubi are.
Well, present me hasn't listened to past me do this episode yet, so I don't know anything.
That's fair. Okay.
Do you know who know lots of things, though?
That would be our supporting producer patrons.
That's right. So thank you so much to Neil, Philip, Julie, Sarah, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Maria, Cami, Lindsay, Ryan, Shelby, Lynn, Mercedes, Phil, Catherine, and Deborah. And of course, our legend-level patrons, Sandra, Ashley Marie, Buggy, Leanne, Ashley, Shannon, and Cassie.
You all are amazing. And anyone looking at you would think you are the platonic ideal of a human being.
Oh, Jules. That's so sweet of you.
I do my best.
I'm super stoked about our sponsor this week.
Me too.
Do you want to tell us about Talus Clothing?
Talus Clothing is a clothing line based out of Los Angeles. Each garment is hand-printed on 100% cotton, and the images on the shirts reference psychic protection, astrology, divination, and are meant to impart a sense of mental or psychic protection to the wearer.
They are so beautiful. There are these wonderful, like, anatomical drawings and sort of tarot imagery. Oh my gosh, we're going to tell you so much more about them later in the episode, but you can go to bit.ly/spiritstalus. The link is also in the description of this podcast, and use code SPIRITS for 15% off your order. And, like, trust me, if you listen to the show, you are going to want these
shirts. They're worth it. We will post a picture of us wearing the shirts, and they're very cool.
Check out our Instagram. That's a great plug, Jules. Yeah. We are at Spirits Podcast on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook and on all the places, but Instagram in particular, I like it a lot. I'll, like, add to our story sometimes throughout the day as I see creepy stuff or dogs on the sidewalk. So if you
creepy stuff or dogs.
You know, it's what I'm here for. So if you don't yet follow at Spirits Podcast on Instagram, now's a great time to do it.
Do it.
And if we could ask one final favor of you, it is a wonderful time. Ides of March, I don't know, spring equinox, time zones are changing. It's a great time to recommend Spirits to someone.
Yeah.
It just always is.
It is.
You can help us grow the pie of podcast listeners and have more people to, like, freak out about podcasts with. So find your friend or coworker or family member or pet sitter or barista, if it's done in a respectful way that doesn't, like, violate their boundaries because they're at work and you're just a person. But recommend podcasts to them. Tell them how to listen to a podcast. Subscribe to Spirits for them. It is great. You're going to introduce podcasts into their lives.
What kind of pie is a podcast pie?
Peaches, because we're all cute.
That's adorable. I was thinking of like a chocolate peanut butter, like savory and sweet. Mm.
Yeah. You put some Himalayan salt on top.
Oh, yes. I hate you. I'm so hungry.
Oh, Jules. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for recommending the show. And enjoy Spirits Podcast Episode 69.
Nice.
Succubus.
Amanda, I had a very nice, very thoughtful episode planned out this week.
Yeah.
And then I saw what number episode this was going to be, and everything went out the window because I'm a child.
Julia, what number is this episode?
So for episode 69, nice.
Listen, we are thoughtful, feminist, educated women, and we are allowed to make stupid jokes about 69 and 420. Do you remember when you learned what those things were? I was like 7th or 8th grade for me.
No, I don't recall learning about one.
Well, you probably, like a normal person, picked it up over time, where I was like, what does that mean? And
yeah, that sounds like you.
Yeah, yeah. Middle school was hard.
So for episode 69, nice, we are going to be talking about, you guessed it, succubuses.
Yes.
Succubi?
Succubi.
It's succubi.
Love it.
So Amanda, tell me what you know about succubi.
Oh, Julia, I know a great deal about succubi.
Okay, do you want to plug our show that it's all about a succubus?
Because we have a fan cast about a succubus named Beau.
Yes.
Jones is her last name, actually,
I guess.
Which we don't know. But our show is called Waystation, a Lost Girl fan cast about the TV show Lost Girl, which is very queer. Mainly because the protagonist is a bisexual succubus named Beau, and she derives energy from what they call sexual chi,
which is
not a thing and kind of appropriative, vaguely.
Yeah.
But she derives energy from having sex or kind of sexual relations with different people. And in the show, she also has a kind of ability to like influence or control others by making them desire her. So that is the sum total of what I know about succubi.
Okay. Mostly not accurate, but we'll get there.
Listen, you don't go to Lost Girl for the mythology.
You do not.
You go for a paranormal procedural with a lot of sex.
I got really mad during our last episode because the mythology is almost never right.
Yeah, but we're going episode by episode, starting with season one, so it's never a bad time to jump on that Waystation bandwagon.
Yeah, it's a good show. Anyway, let's talk about succubi. First things first, we'll talk about where the term succubus came from.
Okay.
Succuba in Latin means paramour, which derives from the term succub, which means to lie beneath, describing both the sleeper's position to the supernatural being when it feeds on it. And we'll get to that point. And also like to lie with in the biblical sense. So this term,
which I also had no idea what that meant until about 9th grade.
Oh, buddy.
Yep.
Oh, buddy.
Yep. Theater was great because we had to explain all these body jokes in Shakespeare.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's what that means.
okay. Interesting. Yeah. As Amanda sips her rum out of her water bottle during a production of Romeo and Juliet.
Listen, one has to learn somehow.
That is true. So the term is first used during the late 14th century. First, the basics. The succubus is a type of demon that always takes the female form. That's because the male form is known as an incubus.
Oh.
They are said to appear in dreams in order to seduce men through sexual activity.
So is the same demon a succubus if they manifest female, and an incubus if they manifest male, or different demons? And those are succubus demon always manifests as a woman.
Yeah, succubus demon always manifests as a woman. Incubus always manifests as a man. That's really the only differentiating point.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So they pop into dreams and make the men do sexual things?
Yeah. Basically. Oh. Yeah, they basically sleep with people in their dreams.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This demon is tied to the Abrahamic traditions historically, mainly Christianity and Judaism.
Really?
These traditions believe that repeated sexual activity with a succubus may result in the deterioration of health and mental state, and may even lead to death.
So sort of like your sanity gets chipped away as you, engage
fool
with this
around
demon.
With this demon. Yeah.
Now, can people say no in their dreams? Like, I'm getting kind of iffy vibes about consent here.
Yeah, you can, because there's been arguments about how to ward off or resist a succubus,
right?
So there is that option, and it's like it plays into weird concepts of like lust and sinfulness and like trying to have
pure thoughts and whatnot.
Yeah, we're diving right in there.
Yeah, we're getting right in there. Going a bit more into the folklore, according to some Jewish texts dating back to about the 10th and 11th centuries, the first succubus was Lilith, right, who was the first wife of Adam, as in Adam and Eve. So she was unsatisfied with Adam and left the Garden of Eden, refusing to return after she mated with the archangel Samael.
Interesting. Yeah. Like, men wouldn't do it for her anymore.
Yeah. She's like, wow. I fucked an angel, so.
Wow. And they're, oof, man, really just, let's put toxic masculinity up in there, too. Yep. Because this whole, like, gross expectation of, like, sexual satisfaction, mm-hmm, and, you know, men being, you know, being quote unquote able to, like, perform sexually X, Y, you know, in like all these specific ways, yeah, just really just starts with the first man, doesn't, yep, it? Not that it's men's fault. It's society's fault. Yeah. Everyone is raised in a sexist society, and dismantling toxic masculinity helps all of us.
Yes,
this has been your PSA.
I agree. So Lilith, along with four other succubi that mated with Samael, become the queens of the demons. So the four are Lilith, Esheth, Agrat Bat Mahalt, and Nama.
These are names that I haven't heard very often.
Yeah, no.
You hear Lilith, as I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago, sort of demon related. Mm-hmm. That makes sense that we don't hear such beautiful names as Rachel and Sarah.
Right.
You know.
Well, so here's the thing. If we're going to have this discussion, we should talk about the historical context of how demons are brought into Christianity and Judaism.
I would love to know.
Basically, it comes down to syncretism.
Which is, let me try to guess this, when an existing religion, or like a religion, gets introduced to a place and it kind of gloms existing traditions.
Yes.
And like explains it and rationalizes it under like their framework.
Right, exactly. Right? So yeah, in a situation like Christianity, you have one supreme God. So you can't have other gods from other traditions, you know,
exactly,
in there.
Either you have to like push them out, or you have to find a way to placate people and allow them to continue talking about and quasi like, you know, doing rituals that are familiar to them, but in a way that doesn't undermine the religious hierarchy.
Right. So traditionally with Christianity, they would do that through either two routes. Saintism, like, yes, creating a saint out of like a being.
Saint Patrick.
Or Saint Bridget.
Yep.
They did a lot of that in Ireland.
They did.
Or demonization, where, yep, you take your god and you're like, well, he's a demon now, or she's a demon now.
I wonder if that's racialized at all.
Probably a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Lilith. Lilith was a goddess in, I want to say, Mesopotamian, probably Assyrian,
mm-hmm,
or actually Babylonian. Babylonian is, mm-hmm, correct. That, you know, once Judaism and Christianity both moved into the area, she became known as a demon instead of the goddess that she was.
Yeah, because I was going to say, the, you know, the Bible that we grew up with is so clear as to Adam was the first man, Eve was the first woman, blank, mm-hmm, you know, done. So there must be some kind of reason why Lilith wasn't like part of that, you know, foundational, mm-hmm, myth, like told from the top.
Right.
There's a way to kind of be like, oh yes, well, there was someone else, but, yeah, you know, we strike her from the records because she did X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Which, you know, it works, but there are all problems with the Genesis section of the Bible that we will not get into. So get back on the succubus page. According to the versions of folklore where Lilith is the first succubus, a succubus would take the form of a beautiful young woman, but upon closer inspection, she would be revealed to have some sort of deformity, such as bird claws or serpentine tails, which, okay, I just... Personally, I can't imagine looking at someone who is just so beautiful and I don't notice their snake tail.
And it's not like disguise, like deer woman, where, you know, looks like a person and then she either disguises the deer hooves or they like come out later.
No, because she's usually naked in dreams. So.
Right. Oh, the succubus.
It's,
yeah,
it's hard to cover that up, you know?
That's, oh, I was thinking just like meeting them in the market or something. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's, I don't know. Maybe the idea is that you're kind of so overcome by lust that you don't assess the situation rationally.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
And like, listen, that's an anthropomorphizing, a like mixing of creatures, which I'm usually pretty against. But this is endearing. I can take a lady with talents. That's fine.
Oh, little, okay. I was going to say, tail. I can do this tail. I don't think that like bird claws on her fingers and toes would
I was
do
picturing
it
just
me.
Toes. That's like, that'd be a little bit different if it was the hands too.
I think it's probably the hands too.
All right. I'd draw the line. All but right. Point being, it's
the
not.
The line is drawn.
Got to draw a line somewhere.
The folklore actually can get really explicit. I wrote down a lot of this stuff and then I deleted it because I didn't want to say it on a show that my parents can listen to.
69 nice episodes later, we are finally realizing that that we have to talk really about bad. Stuff that we talk about.
It was really bad. Probably the most tame thing that I wrote down was in regards to having sex with the succubus. The fact that penetrating one is basically like entering a cavern of ice.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, sensation? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that is surprising to me, mostly because demons are associated with heat, hellfire.
Not necessarily, because like according to Dante, the final ring of hell is frozen over.
That's true. That's true. But I guess when I think about all the, you know, we weren't raised fundamentalist, which often have more like
hellfire,
you know, brimstone and fire and all this kind of stuff. The Catholics are more like, nope, you'll go to the bad place and you don't want to be there.
We're not going to give you any details, but you
don't
want to go there.
Trust me, you don't want to go there. So there's less of the like explicit imagery of like, you know, torture and fire and blah, blah, blah. But in my head, hell has always been like a red, barren magma, like volcanic looking place. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the idea of one of its creatures being icy.
Maybe that's how they survive.
Just different. Maybe that is how they survive.
Because their internal temperature is so low, it keeps them cool in that hot, hot tundra.
I don't know. Or like, that's why tundras are just barren. Yeah. Tundras can be hot, as one of our geology teachers taught us in high school. Anyway, that's why the conception of Hades being sort of like filled with precious metals was so interesting to me.
Yeah.
And why the musical Hades Town kind of renders it as like a mining town. Mm. And so just that idea that like, oh no, it doesn't have to be like all on fire. It can just be barren in other ways or non-earth-like or hostile to life in different ways. If you look at it that way, it makes perfect sense that there could be an icy version as well. That's or true. Like Dante, you know, various kind of all captured within that same umbrella.
Yeah. Sometimes
umbrella.
It's windy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very humid sometimes, swampy. Annihilation, what up?
Yo, Annihilation, what up?
We just put a review of Annihilation on our Patreon, by the way, so patrons can listen to that audio extra.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. According to the Malleus Maleficarum, or
ooh,
the Witch's
title.
Hammer, which love that's, I literally kept it in because that's how good the title is.
I love it so much.
Which was written in 1486. Succubi collect semen from the men they seduce, which they then give to incubi, their male counterparts.
For what purpose?
The incubi then use it to impregnate humans, effectively siring children despite both the succubi and the incubi being said to be unable to reproduce.
What a brilliant way to explain pregnancy out of wedlock.
Yep.
Wow.
So children that are birthed using this method are known as cambions, and they're usually just analogous to changelings,
like unearthly.
Yeah. So they're either born deformed or they're said to be more susceptible to supernatural influence.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of idea of like a liminal child, sort of 1 foot in and 1 foot out of the world, is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Changeling myths, I don't know, as a kid, I was always like, I want to be a changeling. I want to be a little bit special. You know, I want to like have a place that I'm taken to when I'm old enough, sort of that Hogwarts idea. But that is very cool. And obviously there must be so many examples where people had children when they were unmarried, or, you know, if one of the partners was infertile and then someone else suddenly was pregnant. There's lots of reasons that this myth would be extremely convenient.
Yes, I agree. So why scientifically are succubi a thing is a thing I'm going to tell you about, apparently.
Okay.
So I'm going to call this science speculation corner.
Ooh, I love it.
So, Amanda, are you familiar with sleep paralysis?
I am.
Yes.
Not personally firsthand, because it sounds freaking terrifying, but I've heard of it.
For those of our listeners who are not familiar with it, basically it's a condition where people, while either waking up or falling asleep, are aware but unable to move. And during an episode, they can hear, feel, or see things that are not there. So actually in modern day scientists kind of equate sleep paralysis with UFO sightings and abduction stories.
Which will often include the person saying something like, you know, I was aware of what was happening, but I couldn't control it, or, you know, I couldn't move and there were things, you know, being done around or to me. So that makes total sense that those things could be correlated.
Right, which I just think it's really interesting. So the argument is that succubi interactions were said to be some kind of sleep paralysis.
Do people also report hallucinations or visions during sleep paralysis?
Yeah. Yeah, that's 100% a thing. People can hear, see, and feel things that, like, aren't there during sleep paralysis.
Wow, so kind of like waking dream type situation.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, it makes so much sense also why the demon would be on top of the, you know, kind of prone human being.
Yeah.
Because those two theories, you know, sound pretty plausible.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, King James the VI, who has a lot to say about succubi for some reason.
Ruh-roh.
He correlated succubi with wet dreams.
Sure.
During this period, sexual activities not purposefully for procreation were considered sinful.
Right.
So the succubi were used as an explanation for nocturnal emissions for people who want to stay faithful to their society.
That does make absolute sense, because under this kind of framework of, you know, sex only being for procreation, the sex that isn't for that is seen as wasted, especially for, you know, people that emit sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So for the idea to be like, well, you know, a demon was there in my sleep and it was, you know, either involuntary or I was under an influence or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That is, again, like, makes me kind of icky in terms of consent.
Yeah, it is a little icky in terms of consent, but it is a demon. So it's not like...
Right, so there's always a kind of explanation that, like, hey, you know, it is a thing that I would consent to in my right mind, but I was sleeping, but the demon influenced my, you know, my brain, but, mm-hmm. you know, I was unable to move.
Right.
So that is, like, such a, you know, plausible, I think, correlation to make.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's super interesting, and I love when our mythology has a little bit of a scientific explanation behind it. That's always,
yeah,
always
another
a fun
example
time.
Of how we use stories to explain stuff, you that know, to ourselves.
But Amanda, Christianity and Judaism weren't the only ones that had these types of seducing demons / evil spirits.
Before we get to that, Julia, can we grab a refill?
You read my mind.
I'm going to need it.
Yes, you really, really are. This week's episode is brought to you by Talus Clothing. Talus Clothing is a cool supernatural mythology-based clothing line that is based out of Los Angeles.
They are so incredible. The minute Julia sent me their website, I was like, oh, yes, yep, that's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make the most gorgeous shirts and other products with, like, these beautiful images of, like, bodies and kind of tarot symbols and handwriting. And when we reached out to the owner of the company, she actually told us that the handwriting that she puts on the shirts are taken from an actual medium, like a spirit medium, in the 1800s.
How cool is that?
Who recorded the people he channeled in his own handwriting. There are sometimes legible names like Caesar or Augustus, which, like, that's not creepy at all.
Nope.
But more often they were, like, abstract symbols and drawings, scribbles, circles, stuff like that. There's ancient Greek, Latin, and Hebrew talismans that signify protection, luck, good memory, stuff like that. And, like, you look at these items and you know, like, oh man, that is so intentional. And I don't know, just when I wear it, I feel like there's just, like, a something extra helping me throughout my day.
I'm holding my shirt right now because we got them in the mail and they're amazing and they're beautiful. They're also the softest thing. Like, they're 100% cotton. Sometimes, you know, the quality of that is not great. Oh my God, these are so nice and soft and, like, smooth feeling. And I just know that I'm going to be, like, super comfortable when I wear it, like, out of bed tomorrow or something like that.
Yeah. And they have blue, they have white, they have black. I really love black t-shirts, especially
cool,
in the,
like,
summer.
Olive color now.
Yeah. Like, olivey taupe. I actually have to be careful that I don't wear my like olive coat with my olive shirt because I'm going to clash.
Uh-huh.
But I'm getting excited for the spring weather. And I love that I can wear these short sleeve shirts with my almost like dice drawings on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of show off my tattoos and have a wonderful, I don't know, wonderful day in my Venus short sleeve shirt.
Yeah, and the long sleeve one has the talismans going down the arm, and it's really, really cool.
I know there are some, like, over your hip, and there's some kind of over your heart, and it, you know, again, whether or not this is something that you think has a real significance in your daily life, feeling, like, confident and stoked and loving what you're wearing, you know, it's never going to hurt.
Yeah.
And I really, really love Tal's clothing. They were kind enough to offer us a discount code. So if you go to bit.ly/spiritstalis, that's also in the description of the podcast, you can use the code spirits for 15% off your order.
Right. And Talis is spelled T-A-L-I-S.
Yep. So spiritstalis. And if nothing else, go to the website, look at it, follow her on Insta. They're incredible.
They're so pretty. I love all of them. They feel like when you look at those really old kind of gorgeous tarot decks, mm-hmm. that's what they remind me of.
It's amazing. It's such a sense of history. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, modern designer in Los Angeles, you know, supporting other small businesses. And we love her a lot.
Making cool stuff.
Yes.
What else could you want? Nothing.
I don't know. Venus protecting me during my day?
Yeah.
Love it.
We got it.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.
Right. Well, now let's get back to the show.
So, Amanda, we are going to take a quick trip around the world to find out more about these sexy, sexy demons.
Let's do it.
You ready? So the first one is the Quarina, which is an Arabian mythology story. So this spirit either has origins in ancient Egyptian religion or pre-Islamic Arabia. The spirit is said to sleep with a person physically, like next to them,
okay,
in the same bed as them, and then have sex with them, you know, sexually.
Thanks.
While they sleep.
It really is so inconvenient that we use sleep as a you know, verb to indicate sex, because yes, those are two different things. I want to talk about both of them.
Yes.
Come on.
We're talking about both in this situation.
All right.
But the only indication that it was there and had sex with them is the dreams that the person has.
Wow.
So very, very similar.
But being in the physical realm, I think, is another kind of way that this myth goes.
Yeah. Interestingly, so they're said to be invisible, but someone with second sight could see them.
Hmm.
And when they do see them, they're usually taking the form of some sort of household pet, like a cat or a dog.
Yikes.
Or a chinchilla, maybe. I don't know. Many of the stories also indicate that exhaustion upon waking is a sign that you've been visited by the spirit.
Wow. All things that are perfectly common,
yeah,
you know, to like see a common animal somewhere, shouldn't be in the middle of the night, to feel exhausted, to wake up and feel uncanny, you know, as if like something has happened to you during sleep.
To have a weird sex dream.
To have a weird sex dream. Yeah.
It happens to everyone.
Yes.
We're going to go to India next.
Ooh.
And specifically, this is a story that crosses both Hindu, Buddhist, and Jain mythology.
Wow.
And these are known as the Yakshini.
Tell me about them.
So they are said to be the attendees of Kubera, who is the Hindu god of wealth. They are guardians of treasures hidden in the earth and depicted as beautiful, with wide hips, narrow waists, broad shoulders, and large breasts. Interestingly, these are usually benevolent creatures, but there are a few stories in Indian folklore that have them sort of with malevolent characteristics.
And are they gender fluid, gender neutral women?
They're usually portrayed as women.
Huh.
Moving on to Greek mythology, because of course, why not? We have the shape-shifting Empusa. It is said to be a category of phantom or specter, which is thought to seduce and feed on young men.
Okay.
The way of spotting a Empusa is that they have only one... I wrote this down weird. They have only one flesh leg.
Jillian, do they have another leg made of something else?
The other is made of copper and was given to the creature by Hecate.
Okay.
The flesh leg.
I'm not going to make the obvious joke.
I mean, if you're going to make that joke, this is the episode to do it.
I'm not.
Okay.
But you, sure? You could have said they have two legs. One is made of flesh, one is made of copper. Instead, you did not.
I did not. I said one flesh leg. Whoops. Okay. According to the Life of Apollonius of Tyana, a young philosophy student was seduced by an impusa, but also the story tells about how he was able to chase it off by hurling insults at the creature, which it caused it to run and hide, uttering a high-pitched scream.
Oh my God, what a self-aggrandizing story. Yes, I'm a student of philosophy, but I was visited by a sexy monster and I was so like cuttingly witty to it that it ran away yelling.
Yeah. Another version of the story says she would feast on the blood of young men while they slept, first drinking their blood and then eating their flesh.
Ooh, a little flesh appetizer there.
A little bit of light cannibalism.
We really do need a light cannibalism stinger.
We do.
Eric, can you work on that?
Cannibalism. It's a little bit too long.
Light cannibalism. I'm picturing like a 80s sitcom montage now.
Mm-hmm. Of just like people nomming on
other
people.
Cool. And just like a dad walking in and seeing the kids with no napkins, like, oh, come on.
Shucks, guys.
Cannibalism isn't funny.
God. Moving on to Scandinavia.
Ooh.
The seductive forest creature of Scandinavian folklore is known as the Holder or the Holdra.
Tag yourself, I'm seductive forest creature.
Cool. Her name means covered or secret, and she can be described as either seductively beautiful, while her male counterparts are hideous.
I like the little distribution there. It's not what you think.
According to Christian versions of the folklore, the tale tells of how a woman had only washed half of her children when God came to her cottage.
Oh, boy.
Ashamed, she tried to hide the dirty children, but God found them and decreed that because she had hidden them from him, those children would be hidden from humanity and became the Holders.
Aw, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I'm sure that woman was fucking overworked.
Yeah.
Come on, God. If you made perfect creatures, then why does it matter if they're dirty?
Oh, that's true. Despite this, they actually don't have a super bad relationship with humans. Holder and humans can get along if they're treated with respect, and holders will be kind, particularly to charcoal burners, which they'll watch their kilns while they're resting.
Wow, which that's actually very sweet.
Kind of adorable.
It reminds me of kind of house spirits and fae, which we, you know, talk about a lot. But if you are, you know, mutually respectful, if you keep them happy, then they'll keep you happy. But this idea of just a little, you know, person living their life sort of hidden from view but having a constructive relationship with the visible world is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So Amanda, you know Japan's got a good version of this story.
Oh, please.
Japan actually has a lot of versions of the story, but I picked my favorite.
Thank you so much.
So my favorite is the Jorogumo.
Okay.
She is a yokai, which is a kind of like evil spirit, who can shapeshift into a beautiful woman, but her name means woman spider or entangling newlywed woman.
Uh-oh.
Where do you think this is going?
Oops-a-daisy.
So this, her name, comes from the fact that most of the stories feature her attempting to convince a man that she has birthed his child, which is secretly a bundle of spider silk filled with small fire-breathing spiders.
Terrifying.
Or she is a young woman who attempts to marry an already married man, only to wrap him up on their wedding night in spiderwebs and devour him.
This is a pretty bitchin' urban legend, not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It is very good.
It's quality shit.
Oh, man. Both of those versions are just like, baby, nope, it's spiders.
That's what happened.
New wife, nope, it's spiders.
Nope, it's just a big ol' spider.
And I don't want to dwell on this too much because I know there are folks who are arachnophobic, but there's just... that if you want to dwell on that image, there's so much there. There's so much there.
There is. There's a lot.
Oh, Japan, you always come through. Thank you.
You do. Thank you. Such quality. Next, we are going to talk about La Saguanaba, which is a character from Central American folklore and is said to be a shape-changing spirit that takes the form of an attractive, long-haired woman when seen from behind.
Uh-oh.
She lures men away into danger before revealing her face is actually either that of a horse or a skull.
No!
Or a horse skull.
I don't like either one.
She likes to lure lone men out late on dark, moonless nights and tempts them away from their planned routes, usually to lose them in deep canyons.
Oh, so she doesn't even sleep with them? She just like...
No, like... she's just like, I'm pretty, follow me. And they do.
Oh, no.
Then they get lost.
Now I want, like, for every date I go on in the future to be like, let's stand in full light and just look at each other all the way around. just walk around your date once. Walk around clockwise two times and just give yourself the satisfaction of knowing that she may end up being spiders all the way down, but she certainly is not going to be a literal horse face.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if in Spanish, horse-faced is a similar, like, derogatory word for women.
I don't know.
You know, it's like an insult about, you know. So I wonder if that, if...
That's also translates to a really, like, gendered insult. You never tell a dude he looks horse-faced.
You sure don't. There are lots of other ways in which men's bodies are policed and insulted, but being horse-faced is not one of them.
Yep, that's true. Okay, there's also the tunda, which is a myth from the Pacific coastal region of Colombia and Ecuador.
Hmm.
This is a shape-shifting entity, usually resembling a human female, that is said to lure people into forests and keep them there. So it will change its appearance into the form of a loved one, such as a child's mother or a spouse, then lure the person into the forest and keep them there by feeding them shrimp to keep them docile, which is just such a great fact. Like, same. I would be docile if you just kept feeding me shrimp.
Yeah, like if you looked like, you know, someone I loved and trusted and just kept feeding me shrimp, I'd be like,
we're going to live in the forest now. I'd be like, all right, cool.
I mean, I pretty much am always ready to go live in the forest. If the forest has, like, books and antibacterial soap, I'm there.
Yeah. So her shape-shifting abilities are imperfect, and there's always some sort of wooden leg that she tries her best to hide.
Oh.
Yeah. Always a wooden leg.
You know, I really do love the, like, the supernatural slipping into the real, though. Like, that's a thing that I really, really dig. And whether it's, you know, myths where if you look at the woman from behind and then the front is demonic, or, you know, the deer woman where you have deer hooves under the, you know, beautiful human body. Just a little bit of slippage or like a shimmer and you see through an illusion into a, like, fairy city or something. I don't know. That just never fails to really captivate me.
I dig it. I'm into it. All right, so this is the last one.
Okay.
This is the story of the Shatabai, which literally means the female ensnarer in Mayan and refers to a demon that seduces and kills.
Okay. Ooh.
So it tells the story of two women. One is a sex worker and the other is, in quotes, a good and decent woman, which means she's a virgin.
Okay, so we are obviously going to acknowledge the fact that this is a problematic and sex-shaming dichotomy, which is not the way that we view the world now, but let's look at the framework in which this myth was given to us.
Yes, and there's also a very good twist that is somewhat redeeming at the end, and we will get there.
All right, let's do it.
So the sex worker was said to be a very good woman. She would help the poor and sick. She adopted abandoned animals. She gave up the jewelry and fine clothes that she was given to her by her lovers. Very pure and sweet person.
Modest, besides helpful, her, compassionate.
Yeah, besides the view of society of her position.
Yeah.
The quote-unquote good woman was said to be cold, full of pride, and easily disgusted by the poor. One day, our sex worker goes missing.
Oh no.
A wonderful perfumed smell fills the village, and people find that it's coming from her house, and that she has died, but she's being protected by all her animals, which is just a really adorable image.
Yeah.
But her body doesn't smell of death, it smells beautiful.
Wow.
So the people of the village bury her, and her grave becomes overgrown with beautiful flowers that always give off this beautiful, fragrant smell.
That's so beautiful.
The good and pure woman...
Yeah, that's the sound of our scare quotes.
That's my air quotes. Claims that if that is how the other woman smelled in death, that she will smell even better.
Right. I'm so morally superior in the one way and none others. That she must smell better after death.
Yeah, gross. So she...
That's a very weird way to be vain,
I know.
Also.
She eventually dies as a virgin, and the entire village attends her funeral. But to the amazement of the village, an intolerable stench comes out of her grave, reminiscent of the spiny cactus flower that has this disagreeable odor.
Yikes. So I'm assuming sort of like rotten, putrid type smell.
Yeah. So in death, she becomes even more jealous of her counterpart, and becomes the Shatabai after making a deal with evil spirits.
Oh, so
she comes back to life and seduces men with nefarious love, since her heart has no room for any other kind of love. She waits for men in the forest, combing her long, beautiful hair with the spiny needles of the cactus.
Ooh.
And she seduces these wayward men, then kills them in the infernal act of lovemaking.
What, that genuinely was a twist. Yeah. I did not see that one coming.
It was a good one, right?
Also, when you said wonderful perfumed, I think, scent, mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say wonderful perfumed woman. And I was like, what an interesting way to describe a person, Julia.
She's wonderfully perfumed.
Yeah, her skin is very soft and her eyes are very beautiful and she is wonderfully perfumed.
She just smells delicious. But yeah, that is all the succubus stories I've got for you this time around.
Wow. I mean, what a source of shame sex is, huh? Like that's so many different, like, religious systems, societal ideals, whether it's village politics and the one we just discussed, or something as big as like the first man and woman,
yeah.
You know, and first two women, I guess. It's just, it makes you wonder, right?
Yeah, it does. Makes me wonder, who am I having sex with? Will they try and murder me in a forest? Will I be driven insane by the sex that we have? Maybe, if it's good.
I kind of want a beautiful bower of perfumed flowers on my grave. That's sort of nice.
Yeah. Why don't we do that anymore? We're just so into the idea of like headstone grass.
We talked last week about the mort safe, which is like that cage over the grave to stop grave robbers from getting in and stuff from getting out. Anyway, I more kind of cool, creative graves. I'm sure there are lots of very neat ones out there. So if you have your favorite tombstones or grave photos, please send them our way.
Send us your tombstones.
I don't know. You know, we've covered the ways in which, like, you know, sex shaming and toxic masculinity and, you know, problematic, like, cultures of consent can kind of contribute to sex being a, like, shameful thing, a weapon, a thing that's, like, weaponized by religion, by politics, by society, by, you know, patriarchy, against people. But at the end of the day, like, the more you talk about it, the less scary it is, right? And whether that's talking about the fact that, like, yes, you know, weird things in your mind while you're sleeping are completely okay. Like,
right.
It is your brain doing odd stuff. All of us, it happens. And like, it is not a weird thing. Your body doing involuntary things while you sleep is completely okay. Like having, you know, whatever the thoughts are that you think are particular to you are completely okay. If they disrupt your life, find help. Like, that is a great thing to do. But otherwise, it is completely okay.
Right.
And anything that has this much power in myth, whether it's like, you know, coveting someone else's like stuff or position or society, like that is the thing that comes up in myths so often, or fear of death, right? Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it and it comes up so often. Jealousy, you know, kind of around the covetousness, like it's a thing that we just shamefully kind of like push down and it hibernates.
Mm-hmm.
And Brené Brown, the author, has this image of shame as a petri dish, where like the more you cover it up, the more it grows, like, you know, bacteria in a petri dish just kind of like taking over the space.
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk about shame and like ask for, you know, assistance and like air it out with people and sort of, I don't know, you don't cover it up, then the petri dish kind of shrinks in it and it doesn't have a chance to like take root and fester.
Yeah.
Point being, like, you know, most of us now live in a culture where, you know, we don't have to be ashamed of sex or wanting it or not wanting it or who we want to have it with or how we want to have it. And so as much as, I don't know, I want to be able to like laugh at these myths with a light heart. But
yes.
Right now, you know, it is complicated because it does remind us of so many things that, you know, have a real effect on people today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point. Like, isolationism is very much the method in which a lot of these stories ended up taking place, because we felt like we couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
So we had to come up with these stories that made it weird. Don't make it weird. Just talk about it. It's fine.
I know, man. The minute that someone told me it's okay to like say stuff, it was great.
Yeah.
It was just so much better.
I agree. Ugh. Just say the stuff.
Just say the stuff.
And hey, also, stay creepy.
Stay cool.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch, on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.